Hello, and welcome to the Daydream Believers podcast. I'm your host, Liz Chiarelli. Here, you'll find a monthly dose of insight to help keep you motivated, inspired, and informed so you can continue working towards your dreams. We cover a variety of topics from mindset to health to strategy so you can become the person you need to be in order to turn your dreams into reality. Every now and then, we'll also bring in some music artists to showcase some of the finest electronic music out there. Thanks for listening, and remember to head to lizchiarelli.com to download a free morning motivation that'll guarantee you start each day strong and stay on the path to success. Now, on to the show. Hello, Ron. I'm so excited to chat to you today. So I'm going to introduce you because I'm guessing that the people that are listening to this, this will be the first time that they're virtually meeting you. So Ron is a fantastic songwriter, poet and writer, and is also an incredible music teacher. I met him when I was over in California last year at Gary's studio, my music production mentor. And we became friends almost instantly, didn't we, Ron?
Yeah, we sure did.
He joined Daydream Believers, and the rest is history. We've been good friends since, very good friends.
Yes.
I'm really excited to be able to chat to you today. And
I'm absolutely stoked out of my mind to be here and do this. This is fun and rewarding.
Amazing. So, Ron, the first thing I'd love to ask you about is your music. Tell people about the music that you write.
It's really eclectic. When I was growing up, when you bought an album by anybody, it had folk, rock, blues, country. It had a lot of different musical styles on it, as opposed to now, when you buy a CD, it's pretty much all the same thing. You're just buying one kind of music. So I grew up in an environment where we were introduced to tons of different kinds of music by the Beatles, Rolling Stones, all those bands. Every last one of them did all kinds of different music. So I wanted to do that. Well, I was too young to know that you can't play everything. So I kind of got mediocre good at playing a lot of different styles, but I never got really, really good at playing one thing. So I just kind of ended up in this place where I could come over here, I could go over there and fit in, because I don't want to diminish it at all. I was good enough to be part of a blues band, a rock band, or anything else. Country band, I could do any of that stuff. Not super duper hot like, you know, some really, really crazy guitar players, but I was good enough to be there and join in that. I got a lot out of what happened when for what I do and who I ended up being, growing up in the 60s and turning 20 in 1976 was absolutely perfect for me. The Rolling Stones were an excellent band for a boy to adolesce to. I never could figure out how they knew what I was thinking and feeling. I love the Beatles. I love Cream. I loved all those bands. And I also fell in love with words. Bob Dylan and Paul Simon, Tom Waits, a lot of those people, Joni Mitchell. But I think mostly Paul Simon was a huge influence on me, because at that point in time, lyrics were extremely important to everybody. They meant something. To this day, I think a good song is a song that you can recite the lyrics to without the music, and it's just as good. That got lost in time. We got, you know, people started caring more about production values, not as much about lyrics. You hear songs where they repeat the same phrase over and over again. And to one degree or another, that craft kind of got buried in time. But it's still really important to me. Now, here's a story for you that I think is interesting and funny. I grew up on a street of boys. There was 5 to 8 of us at any given time as people came and went. And when any more than 2 of us were doing anything for a period of time, we made a club. So we had bike clubs and skateboard clubs, and anything was a club. You know, it was summertime and it'd last for 3 weeks, and we'd go off and make another club and do something else. But there was a big thing in like 1964, I think. The media and everybody went nuts because the Beatles wrote their own songs and performed them. That's not unusual now, but then that was very different and very new. Most of the singers, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, all of those guys, the crooners and the people who were popular at that point in time, they had songwriters working for them. They did not write songs. So naturally, we had a songwriting club. So I was 8 years old.
No way. Wow.
And I was writing lyrics like, "Oh, baby, baby, I don't mean maybe." That was pretty good for an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
I found I pretty much had a propensity for writing. And not only did I write pretty good for 8, I liked it. It was very cathartic and very fun. And I have literally been writing ever since then.
Wow.
I always write. I always have a pad, or, you know, the computer changed the way I do things. I'll come home and I'll write on my computer and my laptop and stuff. And naturally, with anybody, any human being alive, when you do something your entire life, you get to a point where you're pretty good at it.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful I met you and Gary. And, you know, the encouragement that you two give me, it has really been huge. It's really helped me a lot. And I'm just out of my mind that you use some of my lyrics for your new CD. I'm really excited and waiting to hear the finished product on that. And me and Gary are putting together a CD. What's kind of not, it's not negative. It's you have to change your mind about how you're dealing with things. A lot of people that we write music for want instrumental. Well, there goes the lyrics.
Yeah.
This last session me and Gary Gray had, I wrote a song called 21 Miles. And we kept listening to it and playing with it. And I was very unhappy with the lyrics right up front. Oh, no, another song about a rambling man that can't settle down. Oh, my God, that's so trite and ridiculous. But we kept messing with it, and I rewrote it about 7 times. It came out okay. It's pretty nice. Kathy loves it. But we sat there and played with it until we had 3 different songs. And I thought, what an interesting way to go about this. You can have the original composition, then you can kick the lyrics out and make it into an instrumental, and then we turned it into a hip-hop
thing.
So we've got 1 song turns into 3, and that's fun. It was really fun, and we're not putting it out. We're actually right now, me and him are writing a 5-song CD.
Cool.
We're working on that, and obviously this all takes immense amounts of time. And, you know, for those of us who are impatient, it's almost torture. I want this done. I want it done and out there now.
Yeah.
But not reality. It can't be good enough if you do it that way. If you just hurry through it, you're going to have a product that sounds like it was hurried through. Yeah. You don't want it. So that's how I started writing.
Love that story. Thank you. And you teach now as well.
I taught for 25 years and I don't teach anymore.
Okay. You stopped teaching.
Yeah, I lived in a town called Poway. It's sort of North County, San Diego. And I drive down to Lemon Grove, and I started teaching 3 sailors. They all knew each other. And it kind of grew from there, and I did a thing where I'd drive to people's houses.
Were they actual sailors? As in,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Navy, they're in the Navy. And I did that for 9 years, driving to people's houses. And I came home one day, and I looked at Kathy. I was just shaking. I was just the traffic and the motion all the time.
It must have been exhausting.
It was. I looked at her and said, I'm not doing this anymore. They can come to me. So then people started coming to the house, and I found a couple little studios that would take me. And eventually we moved, and I ended up in Temecula. That is in Riverside County. It's the next county up from San Diego. And I taught there, and I actually landed a music studio and ended up with 65 students. We were making a really good, and I loved it there. We're having a lot of fun. It's a very active community for creativity. Nice. And I found a position at a place called Musicians Workshop. And the owner let me, he'd put bands together, student bands. So I got to put a student band together called the Musicians Workshop Blues Review. We had a great time. Those kids drew a crowd every time they played. They were great. Everybody loved each other. I just saw Mary last night. She came over to the hotel room. She was our lead singer. And these kids, Mary is in here, lives in Nashville. She sings and performs and writes songs around the South. Sarah lives in LA and she sings and performs.
She was on American Idol.
Eric is in a band called 32 Below. He travels and plays with them all over the country all year. He was our bass player. And Devin just got finished with a tour with Katy Perry.
Amazing.
Yeah. Travis went off and he played in bands for a while, and now he's doing his finals for, what is that called? He's a
anesthesiologist.
He's almost done with his education.
Wow.
Anybody else? Andrew Velasco became a massage technician. He still plays jazz. And my last student I ever had, Leilani Kilgore, she is also here in Nashville. We're going to see her this morning. She got herself in with Joe Bonamassa, and she tours with Buddy Guy, the blues legend. So I got a list of students I can brag about.
Round of applause for Ron. Round of applause.
Really fun, and they're all very creative and extraordinarily talented. It's a lot of fun.
That's amazing.
So, it is. It's really rewarding. And I like to see them. They've all been very good to me and staying in, contact and saying hi to me once in a while. And they've actually come over to my house early on and recorded stuff with me when I first started recording and using a computer to record with. This is hard business for, those of us who are a little bit longer.
You're doing great, Ron. Honestly, you're doing an amazing job.
Trying to figure out a computer when what infuriates you is a 12-year-old can walk in and do it in 3 seconds.
I know, right?
This shouldn't be that hard, but it's infuriating sometimes. It's very frustrating. And Gary has told me a million times, he goes, why people quit doing this is because of the technology. They'll get involved with songwriting and stuff on the computer, and the technology part of it is so frustrating, they quit. Yeah. And I've been close. I've been very close.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you've got Gary by your side, because he will not let you quit.
we've been really blessed with a little pile of money the last year, and so we can do this. But when the money runs out, it's just going to be back to what we were before, is just taking lessons and stuff. So I sat and told him, I said, we either sell something, there's outgo, but there has to be income from the work.
Yeah.
The work, something has to go. And Mary was telling me last night, what they do, the people who can spend money on the internet, a lot of money, to make their numbers look really big, mm-hmm. get attention. Mm-hmm. And if you can't spend that kind of money to make your numbers on Spotify and Facebook and SoundCloud and that stuff look big, the record companies won't pay any attention to you. They're looking for...
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it very much depends on what you're trying to achieve. If you're trying to get the attention of a major record label, they from what I've understood at the moment, no major label is prepared to invest in the marketing and like the huge sums of money that they need to invest in order to get an artist into the public realm into such a way that that artist is then going to bring a revenue back, because they just keep losing money on artists, because quite frankly, I think they've been investing in artists that haven't been able to make their investment come back. They've either flaked or something's gone wrong along the lines. So now major labels are looking at artists who already have a really strong following. But this is if you're after a record deal specifically, because they want you to be an asset to their company rather than a deficit.
I've been around a lot of these people in classes at Palomar and MiraCosta colleges and music classes. And they develop this "I'm an artist" attitude.
Yeah.
And when you try to explain to them this is a business, they actually get offended by it. It bothers them. I've invested an immense amount of money in working with Gary to try to get music into movie, TV, and wherever else we can get it. Mm-hmm. We're close, but like I said before, you can keep dumping money into something and eventually the money's going to run out. You have to have return on your investment.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, if you sat and asked a class full of young people who are musicians and artists, would you like to make a living at playing music? Every one of them will raise their hand without understanding. The minute you say that, you turn your art into a commodity. Mm-hmm. They don't like that. They don't think that way. Mm. And you have to.
You do. You do have to. And from my perspective, the core at being successful in any venture is building relationships and learning how to connect with people in such a way that they care about you as a human being before they've even heard your music. And that to me is how people that don't have huge sums of money to invest in PR campaigns that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars rise to the surface. Because at the end of the day, we're human beings and we are relational. We relate to each other on an emotional level. I know that I choose to not work with people if they're difficult, because I don't want to waste my energy on that.
Well, you know what? We were talking last night and she started getting into this, understanding these people on their Facebook pages. All they care about is their Facebook page and what they're getting out of it.
Yeah.
I started reading a book about how to become a published author. And the information's the same thing.
Yeah.
You have to contact and connect with people. There has to be a connection. Mm-hmm. You have to do things for them. Stop worrying about yourself and start reaching out to them. So I came home and I contacted all of you, as many as I could, and I said, send me any information you have about anything you want to promote. I'll put it on my Ron Kempton Facebook page, which is all music. It's not my regular Facebook page that you always see. It's just music videos and music and writing and stuff. And everybody came in. Liz Hobbs, Matthew, everybody that wanted to. It was about 5 or 6 people all sent stuff. I put it on that page. And before I left, I promoted that page. I paid money to put that page out. And that was for them. It had nothing to do with me. It wasn't doing anything for me. But I wanted them to have that. Yeah. Because I really have, I thought it over, I said, you know, I've asked these people for a lot. I've asked them to help me do this, help me do that. Me. Stop it. Give them something back. And it's long. You have to wait a long time to cultivate the ground and get it going.
Yeah.
Gary are really close to getting something published and picked up. It's there. You just kind of have to wait for it.
Yeah, you do. And you just have to keep trying. Just keep sending stuff out to people, whether it's music or written word, books, poetry, anything that you're trying to get out there, you've just got to keep sending it to the people that can get it out there. And sometimes you might get an offer that's not quite in alignment with your vision. And at that point, you then have to make a choice. And in my opinion, at that point, like if it is a big break for you, you can't be, you can't afford to be precious, and you can't afford to regard your creation as your baby. You know, if they want you to cut down 30% of it or edit it somehow and change this and change that in order for it to fit with their, with what they want it to fit with, I think we as creatives need to be able to be malleable that way and to be able to be flexible to fit with what they need, and not say, oh no, 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 I can't possibly do that because that's my, that's my finest creation. Right. Then you're just shooting yourself in the foot before you've even gotten running.
Those kids at the workshop that I worked with, that band, I always tell people I learned way more from them than they ever learned from me. They were playing one night, and it'd be like they're standing right here, and I'm out in front of them. I sort of pace back and forth and listen and give them advice and stuff. And one night I walked out on the porch of the building. It was a funky old building. And I just stood there, and they got better. They started playing better. And I went, how did that work? It worked because when I was in there, they were playing for me. And when I walked out of the room, they started playing with each other. Mm. So you give that the room it needs, and you understand when you're working with artists, they already know what to do.
Yeah.
All you have to do is point the way.
Yes.
And let them do their job. They're born knowing how to do this stuff. You show them some things and you let them do it. And if you hand your music, your video, your book, your poem, whatever, to someone, they're giving it to an artist that already knows what to do. Let them do it.
Yeah.
And if you have to change something, change it. If they say, you know, have respect for them when they say, it isn't going to work this way, this is really good, but just tweak this over here. And if you go into an ego twist, first of all, nobody's going to do anything with you. And second of all, they're all going to start telling each other, that person's too hard to work with. Yeah. And you're not going to do anything with anybody.
Yeah, definitely. So we've covered how you came to start writing lyrics. You're also an amazing poet and an amazing storyteller. Your book, Child of the Heart, is incredible. I love it. I really want to turn it into a film. One day, somehow, somewhere, it's going to happen.
This book I'm reading about publishing your work, the first thing she said is, the woman who wrote it is, you're not going to publish and get paid for short stories. You are not going to publish and get paid for poems. So I adjusted my thinking. Okay, I've got a really neat short story. It's really cool that I just wrote. Me and Kathy are going to finish it up here in Tennessee, and I'm going to send it over to Spillwords and let them publish it. Wait for the feedback and learn from the feedback what to do. In the meantime, since you were so beautiful and so kind to read that, and actually you're the second person who's ever read that book and really enjoyed it, I'm sitting back waiting to see how much I learn from the short stories and the poems to understand, where do I send this book? Who do I give it to? Who can look at this and say, we're going to do something with this? You know, we've got dreamers that are filmmakers and stuff. Is that possible? Where would the money come from? Where would blah, 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 blah. I mean, you sit and realize, what was that movie they made? Napoleon Dynamite. They made that movie for $250,000.
Yeah,
it made possible. Millions of dollars.
Totally.
It's a hysterically funny movie. That's possible. But again, we're talking about turning something into a commodity where you have to take a certain amount of money, invest it, and you're gambling. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. I'm going to put this out there, and it could sink or it could swim. If it sinks, your money's gone.
The beautiful thing about technology is that the chances of something being successful is greater now, simply because we as creators have the power more than ever before to put our own stuff out there. So our success is kind of dependent on how much effort we're willing to put in. And there are nifty little marketing tricks you can do, like aggregate marketing, like sending links to websites and blogs and Facebook groups and pages that you know are really into the stuff that you're doing, and asking them for a feature. And some of them will turn around and say no. Some of them may ignore you. Some will say yes. And once you get a feature on one page, you can then approach another page and say, hey, so-and-so featured me. I was wondering if you'd be interested in featuring me too. I saw you posted up such and such a video that your audiences went wild over. I think my video would have the same effect. And there you go. Before you know it, you could have a massive snowball effect happening.
Right.
But again, it's all about building relationships with those people, learning how to communicate with them in a way that makes you come across as somebody that they like and want to support.
I think my first step with Child of the Heart is to spend maybe until next spring trying to get it published.
Yeah.
Get the feedback on it from publishing it, share it with people.
Yeah.
I can't keep asking, can you read this? Can you read this? Instead, put it out there in some form. I'm in contact with a woman I have to call, but we have to pay that company to publish it.
Okay.
Now, in the world of learning how to do all this stuff, one of the bits of advice that you get is, do not pay people to publish your work. Mm. But also, they would publish it and promote it. I'm paying for this publication and this promotion. And then it's there to tell people, I did pay and pay for the book to be published and promoted, but this is the reaction it got. This is mm-hmm. how many people looked at it. This is what happened to it. And now you have a book out there, and publishers will look and see what it did and know that you have a book that you can actually accomplish writing a book all the way through, and just go from there. It's kind of a general plan, but again, you don't want to hurry. Do not hurry your creativity. It's probably the worst thing you can possibly do is I've done this. Hurry through. You come up with slop. It isn't as good as it can be. It makes you look bad. Nobody wants to deal with it because you're sending your creations out to professionals who have been looking and listening to this stuff a long time. They know exactly what they're looking at. And today, the same thing has always existed. They will listen to 30 seconds of your song if they listen to 30 seconds of it, and that's it. If you don't catch them in that, you know, now it's like 15 seconds or 3 seconds. If you don't catch them in that first few seconds, your song's gone.
Mm-hmm.
If your book doesn't hook them immediately, your book's gone. So you have to sit there, and I was talking to Kathy about this because we were talking about Bobby Gentry, who sang the classic country song, Ode to Billy Joe. Man, that song, she was such a genius with that song. The first thing she did is bring you into her story. It was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. You're there.
Yeah.
It's hot. They're working out in the field. And now what happened? She mentioned something in the song about her and this guy throwing something off this bridge. People have asked her over and over all these years, what was it? She won't tell him. Why did he commit suicide? She won't tell him. It's just absolutely brilliant. There are web pages that analyze this song. There are. There's like 3 or 4 of them. Go there. What did he do to these people? It was a baby. It was a ring. It was a thing. And that kind of that. You know, she did that on purpose.
Yeah.
I'm going to write this song. I'm going to put stuff in it that's not answerable. It's a brilliant, brilliantly written song. Mm-hmm. So if you can sit down and write something that catches people's imagination like that, good for you. Good job. You know what? I'm going to talk to you right now. I'm going to say something. I am so out of my mind that you're using my lyrics and that me and you have tentatively agreed that, you know, in a certain period of time, we're going to do a whole CD together. That means so much to me. I can't even tell you. I just went mad and started writing my head off. Your willingness to do that made me start going nuts writing.
Amazing. And
it's been a big help, a really big help. Thank you. That's neat.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really excited. Yeah.
All the dreamers have really helped me. Liz Hobbs is now using her married name, and I don't have it drilled into my head yet. But she's been a big support. She's just really cool. Yeah. Matthew, Mark Williams. A lot of them have just are a lot of fun. They'll click in and say hi to you and comment on your stuff and throw stuff back at them. It's an incredible thing you've done.
There are some really beautiful people inside that community. I almost sometimes like when I look at it, I can't believe that I created it or that I just, you know,
it becomes detached. It's just like I don't listen to you're not listening very much. Okay. I wrote it, we worked on it. 6 months went by, I listened to it, and I went, oh my God, what a beautiful song.
It's beautiful.
I wrote that.
I'm going to put a link to it in the bottom of this video so people can listen to it because I love it. I listen to it quite regularly, actually.
It got picked up by a publisher, so somebody's shopping it. But again, you have to be patient.
Yeah.
And let these other professionals do their job.
Yeah.
Hearts in Memphis came out real nice too. Gary did a great video for it.
I'll link to that as well so people can listen. Yeah.
And it's nice. Like I said, when I wrote the lyrics to the new song, I just sat and you know, you'll write lyrics sometimes. The lyrics to You're Not Listening, I sat and looked at them and went, oh, these are really beautiful lyrics. They're very nice. Yeah. I looked at this and went, what is this? Mess. And I rewrote it. I think I rewrote it 9 times.
Wow.
And Gary put it, I said, listen to this. He goes, this is great. Went, it is? And, you know, I mean, he's so good at what he does. He hears beyond what you've introduced to him.
Yeah. Yeah,
and he turns it into what he knows how to turn it into.
Yeah.
And he just does an extraordinary job.
He's amazing.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm collaborating with him. It's a lot of fun. Next. Yeah, I'll tell you what. You asked about how I got into things and doing things writing.
Yeah.
When I was a little kid, I was 9 years old. I was walking down the street, and it's a white bread neighborhood all the way around, very suburban. And a guy's garage door was open. He had the radio on. And I'm walking along, and the sound comes out of the radio. Na, 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 na. And it just flew across the street. My bones, I went, wow! And I just fell in love with the Rolling Stones, and I begged my mom to get me a guitar. I was under those guys' spell for many, many years and learned how to play because of that inspiration. I couldn't believe when I was growing up anything sounded that cool. It just stunned me. The first time I heard Honky Tonk Woman, I almost passed out. I listened about 90 times.
Wow.
And just that whole thing, I would just listen to something, and it would – I used to take this radio my mom gave me, and I'd put it, it was a radio record player thing. It was just really a piece of junk, but it was fun. It worked. I'd put it on a pillow. I'd put on the Wolfman Jack show. I'd put my ear on the speaker, pull another pillow over my head, and pull the blankets over that. So she didn't know that on a school night, I was sitting there at 1 a.m. listening to Motown music and all this other stuff. I loved Motown music.
Yeah.
And I just fell in love with that. So I was enamored by it from day one. And when you do that, I think that story is common. I've heard more musicians and writers and stuff say, when I was a little kid, I was somewhere. I was at a church. I was listening to the radio. I was driving in a car. My dad had something on or something. And it goes inside you. And it goes so far inside you that you immediately make that choice as a child right there. I'm doing that.
Yeah,
and you just pursue it the rest of your life.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter fame, fortune, nothing. You're just in love with this process and this, and being able to make that sound.
Yeah, so true.
And when you write something and people come back and say, "My God, that's beautiful," you go, "Boom, I did it."
Yeah.
I wrote something that touched someone. That's so neat.
Yeah. I've tried to quit music before a couple of times, and it just doesn't work. It just doesn't let go. Once it's inside you, it's inside you. That's it. Yeah.
And I have people ask that question: how do you do this? How'd you do that? And the answer is, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's in here, and you just make it come out. Use a guitar, a piano, or whatever, and you just keep doing it until you're good enough at it to share it with people.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a question.
Yeah, go for it.
Why electric music?
Oh, okay. Well, like you, with your experience when you were younger, I had an experience when I was 18, so slightly older. Up until then, I was fully, fully enamored by blues and jazz and classical music.
Oh.
Always classical music, even now classical music. When I listen to particular tracks, just touches my heart in ways that nothing else does. But when I was 18, I got a job as a waitress in an Italian restaurant, and the head chef loved electronic music. And specifically, euphoric trance, which is what it was called back in the day. And in 1998, this kind of euphoric trance was starting to become quite popular. And he had this cassette playing in the kitchen. And I walked into the kitchen and this music was just blasting at me. And I was like, oh, what's this? Like, it was so noisy and loud and like repetitive, but it had... like that particular style of trance music had the same or a very similar set of harmonic and melodic sequences and structures that were very, very similar to a lot of my favorite classical music pieces. So like the same chord progressions and like different, like it was really intelligent and hooks that just got inside your head. And it just sent a shiver down my spine like nothing I'd ever heard before. It was like the response that I had to classical music, but more full on, more intense. Uh-huh. And so I just started to follow that curiosity, and I started to find the nightclubs that played that sort of music. And it just became almost like my weekly ritual to go clubbing and just dance my ass off to this music. And I just loved it. I wasn't there for the drugs or anything else. I was just there to dance and listen to the music and get this. It was almost like a spiritual experience for me. And so I then began to want to learn how to do what the DJ was doing in the DJ box. I was like, I want to learn how to do that. I want to learn how to mix music like that. And like, I want to learn how to be a DJ. So I took DJing lessons and I learned how to spin vinyl and mix and do tricks with vinyl. And I started pursuing a career as a DJ, and then my curiosity went deeper and took me into music production. And I was like, no, okay, I know how to DJ now, that's cool, but I want to learn how to make this music.
Right.
And that's when I hit a bit of a barrier, because it shocked me at how difficult it was to make music. I was expecting to pick it up just like that, like I had with the DJing. But it was like bomb, 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 like constantly hitting my head against this like really hard and spiky brick wall. I couldn't get into the technology. That was it. That was the one thing that stopped me. So I kind of tried to quit it, but got really depressed. So decided to go to university at the age of 24 to learn how to produce music. And like slowly, slowly, just because I had to deliver projects for uni, I slowly started to break down that wall.
The more you do it, the better you get.
Exactly. But back in those days, I had a very different mindset. I had a very entitled mindset, and I just expected things to fall into my lap really easily. So the fact that I had to work really hard to become a good music producer just wasn't gelling with my mindset. And so it was always a little bit half-hearted, and I always felt really entitled. But by that time, yeah, electronic music had become a part of my blood.
This should fall right into my lap. I deserve it. Oh, no.
Yeah, no, exactly. So I'd like to ask you, regarding your poetry, who do you read the most?
Emily Dickinson.
Okay, Emily Dickinson.
She's my girlfriend. Yeah, I read her. It's really funny because I love autumn. It's my favorite time of year. So in autumn, my poetry books come out. Okay. I don't read poetry all the time. I read Dylan Thomas, who I've never understood a word he says. I actually looked on the internet and said, does anybody understand this man? But I found the connection is it really opens my brain, and words are flying everywhere when I read this guy. Bei Dao, I discovered him. He's a Chinese poet. He writes really beautifully. I have a little bit of a hard time understanding him, too. I like... I just kind of read everything. I read bathroom walls. I read menus. I look around and the biggest poetic thing to me that's happening or that I read or look at is just everything that's going on around me. Yeah. The people that are talking, what they look like, what they sound like, and being observant. This gigantic poem called Life is happening all around us all the time. Yeah. And, you know, the experience I'm having with Kathy on this trip will provide me with years of lyrics and poems and words. And I learned to do something that my wife suggested called stream of consciousness. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the old word association thing where you say something to someone and they repeat back the first thing they think of. But you have to do it on paper, and you have to do it in your own head.
Okay.
And if you're making sense, you're doing it wrong. Okay. You just have to write immediately what you're thinking in your head. And it really opens up a great deal of thought process so you can sit back when you're writing constructively and say, you end up using that as a tool. This poem can't say that. It's stupid. It wants to say something else. Songs and poems and writing have their own personality, and when you start working with them, you have to let them tell you what it is you're doing, especially songs. Songs have their own personality. If you force a song to go to a place that it doesn't want to go, it won't work.
Yeah.
It tells you. Let it tell you what it's where it belongs and how it belongs in your lexicon, in your mind, in your heart, and sit back and go, okay, I rewrite lyrics, I rewrite everything, but when I start constructively putting it together, I let it tell me where it wants to go.
I totally agree. I often, when I'm in the studio producing, I can sometimes feel my ego, like trying to push a track in a particular direction, and I can feel it again. It's that resistance again.
Right.
It's like, no, no, no. And it's like, okay, this doesn't want to go here. Okay, where do you want to go? And it, right. You know, you're communicating with this entity that is this piece of music that's coming through you. You've got nothing to do with it other than the fact that you're bringing it from like out here somewhere into the material realm.
The best thing I think I ever learned, and it became immediate to me, was listening to those kids play when I was standing in front of them and going way back outside and listening to them and going, this already functions.
Yeah.
They already know what to do. Yeah. Your art and your music, it already knows what to do. Point. Let it tell you. They told me, those kids told me, this is what we can do. Here's a story. This is funny. I drive home with Kathy when the kids first started playing, and I'd complain. Ron, do we put this here? Ron, does this go over here? Ron, should I set this here? Ron, should I plug this in here? And about a year and a half went by, And I'm standing there one day, and none of them are saying anything. They're all setting up their equipment, doing everything. And I went, I drove home with Kathy and go, you know what? They don't even need me anymore. I don't even know what I'm doing there. They don't ask me any questions. So it's like, which thing are you going to complain about? Them asking you what to do or them, you know, they've learned what to do. And they don't need you to tell them anymore. And it's like a complaint on both sides. But when you learn and you make yourself, let this happen. Mm-hmm. Let this person, let Liz take those lyrics and let her do it. She knows how. She knows what to do. Don't dictate. Don't stand there. Here, I'll see you later when you're done. Let Gary's really good to me in the studio. He lets me make suggestions, and we actually do work on the songs together. But there's a point where you have to understand this person already knows what to do. You do not have to tell them what you want done with it. Let it work itself out. And that is very artistically difficult.
Yeah. It takes a lot of layers of different things in order to have that happen. One of them is artistic maturity and a true understanding of the nature of creativity and your art and where it comes from.
Right. I mean, I've been through the phases. This is my baby. You can't change it. From my heart. It's from bull. You have to learn. Step back here and let it become what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And I did, again, with You're Not Listening, about a year went by, and Kathy said she wanted to hear it. I put it on. I sat there and went, my God, what a beautiful song. I can't even comprehend me putting that together. But I did.
Yeah.
I wrote this.
Yeah.
And it's really a really pretty, wonderful, very well-written song, and Gary did a great job with it. All of them are. They're really nice songs. But learning to separate yourself and letting the people around you who believe in you, who understand what you're trying to do their job is the best thing you'll ever do for yourself creatively.
Yeah, definitely. And taking rejection positively as well.
I got an answer for you. Here it is. You cannot strike out in the big leagues unless you're in the big leagues in the first place. You've done all this work in the minor leagues. They call you. Oh, my God, they come. I'm going to play for the Los Angeles Dodgers. My God, in your first day there in the batting lineup, you go up and you strike out. The pitcher just waylays you. Boom. And you walk away and go, well, I'm quitting. I can't do this. None of those guys do that. They wait until the batting lineup comes back around. They get up and they go do it again.
Yeah.
And you do it again and you do it again and you do it again. And guess what? One day you're going to hit a ball and one day you're going to hit a home run. You just have to keep going. There's a great book called, I think it's called Walking Like a Drunkard.
Okay.
And it talks about life and averages of stuff that can happen. There's a really interesting part where the guy says, Roger Maris, the great old baseball player, had to do what he did because, number one, he was doing it, and the law was in his favor simply by the fact that he was talented enough to be where he was at and doing what he was doing. He had the chance to not be that, but also he did it so much that the law of averages allowed him to become this gigantic Hall of Fame baseball player. Everyone's life is like that. Mm-hmm. Rejection's the best thing you'll ever get. Mm-hmm. You can't be rejected by a major studio unless you're good enough to send something to a major studio in the first place. Fall in love with rejection. Enjoy disappointment.
Yeah.
And breathe disappointment. It's the best thing you'll ever have. You learn from it.
You do. You really do.
It's your teacher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm not doing this anymore. Okay. Bye.
Then you were doing it for the wrong reasons in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that old saying by Alexander Graham Bell. I think it was him. He said, I didn't fail. I found 10,000 ways this won't work.
Yes. Yeah. I love that quote.
Great. Yeah.
Ron, it's been an absolute pleasure having this conversation with you. I wanted to carry on all day.
I know. I hope someday we get to see each other in real life.
We will. We will soon.
Thank you, Liz. Thank you for everything.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure.
All right, bud. I love you bunches.
Thanks so much for listening. It's my pleasure to be able to bring you guests who are experts in their field to help you continue walking the path of your dreams. Hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to know what you thought of it. So please do remember to subscribe in iTunes and give us a little rate and review. If the show resonated with you, please share it with someone you think would benefit from it. If you have a question or topic you'd like answered on the podcast, head to lizcirelli.com/contact and pop me a message. If you'd like to join my coaching community, Daydream Believers, and connect with me on a deeper level, you can become a patron. Just head to patreon.com/lizcirelli, where you can sign up quickly and easily. As a patron, you'll get access to the full range of my coaching packages, plus you'll get exclusive early access to all of my musical output.